All right, so today we're going to be diving into this blog post that I found really interesting. It's called "Even Agile Projects Need Preparation."
Oh, interesting.
It's by Gerhard Friedrich.
Okay.
Are you familiar with him at all?
Yeah, the name rings a bell. I think I've come across some of his work.
Yeah, he's kind of a big name in IT governance. He's got a ton of experience leading these big digitalization projects, a lot of them in the public sector.
Ah, okay. Yeah, I'm starting to remember now. He's a big proponent of agile methodologies, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's but not in like a dogmatic way. He's all about finding smart combinations with the classic approaches.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you got to be pragmatic, right? Not just blindly follow a framework.
Exactly. And that's actually, a big part of what this blog post is about. He's kind of arguing against any kind of like framework fanaticism.
Interesting. So what's the main thrust of his argument here?
Well, he's basically saying that even when you're going full on agile, you can't just skip the prep work, that getting the preparation right is absolutely essential for these IT projects to actually succeed.
I can definitely see that. It's easy to get so caught up in the whole, agile mindset, the sprints, the iterations, that you lose sight of the bigger picture.
Right. And sometimes I wonder if maybe we rush into agile without really laying the proper groundwork.
Yeah, maybe. I'm curious to hear what Friedrich highlights as those crucial prep steps. What does he think we often miss?
Well, he actually starts off by taking aim at something that's, kind of near and dear to our hearts, user stories.
Okay, yeah, the little snippets that capture what a user wants to be able to do with the system.
Exactly. Yeah. They seem simple enough on the surface, right?
Yeah.
But Friedrich's argument is that they're not the be-all and end-all of requirements gathering.
I can see that. I mean, user stories are great for like understanding user needs in plain language, but
Yeah.
they can sometimes fall short when it comes to those non-functional requirements, the performance, security, scalability aspects.
That's exactly his point. He says that trying to cram those non-functional requirements into that user story format, the as a user I want to thing, can be really clunky and ineffective.
Yeah, gets forced.
Yeah, exactly. He even gives this this great example. He contrasts a user story like, as a user, I want the system to respond quickly so I don't have to wait,
Okay.
with a straight up requirement. Like the system must have a maximum response time of 1 second for 90% of transactions.
Oh, okay, yeah, I see the difference. The second one is much more concrete, measurable, no room for ambiguity there.
Exactly. It's like night and day.
Yeah, I can see why Friedrich sees that as a potential pitfall of relying too heavily on user stories.
Right. It's like you miss the forest for the trees. So, having established that user stories aren't enough on their own, he brings in this agile framework that he thinks kind of addresses these gaps. And it's called DSDM.
DSDM. Okay.
It stands for Dynamic System Development Method.
Oh.
But now I think they call it Agile Business Consortium, or ABC for short. Have
Interesting.
you heard of this one?
Yeah, vaguely. I know it's all about covering the whole project life cycle, not just, the development sprints.
Right.
And it's got some pretty deep roots in the agile world, actually. Arie van Bennekom, one of the signatories of the Agile Manifesto.
Oh, wow.
He was a DSDM representative. So it's not just some kind of offshoot. It's really intertwined with like the origins of agile thinking.
Wow. I didn't realize that
Yeah.
connection.
Yeah.
So it's not just agile inspired, it's practically agile royalty.
Yeah, you could say that.
So how does this royal framework actually work in practice? What's the general approach?
Well, imagine a model diagram, kind of like a visual roadmap for your project. The
Okay.
DSDM breaks things down into four key phases: feasibility, foundations, evolutionary development, and then deployment. And each of these phases has like detailed templates you can
Oh,
use.
templates. Hi, I'm listening.
Yeah, which can be super helpful if you're trying to actually implement it,
Yeah, definitely. But before we jump ahead, let's rewind a bit and go back to those first two phases that you mentioned, the feasibility and the foundations.
Right.
What makes those so critical in the DSDM world?
Well, think of the feasibility study as like your reality check. It's about figuring out upfront whether the project is even worth pursuing. I mean, we've all been there, right? You pour time and energy into something only to realize later on that it was like doomed from the start.
Oh, yeah. The dreaded wasted effort.
Exactly. And that's where Friedrich argues that DSDM really shines. Some frameworks, like SAFe, they touch on feasibility, but DSDM really dives deep.
Okay, so what kind of deep dive are we talking about here? Like, what are we actually looking to get out of a DSDM feasibility study?
So Friedrich lays out a few key outcomes. First, you want some high-level solution sketches. Not, you know, detailed blueprints at this stage, but enough to understand the general direction.
Okay.
Then there's the business case. What's the value proposition? The potential costs? The return on investment?
Right.
And then, of course, you need a prioritized list of requirements. DSDM recommends the Moscow method for that. Must have, should have, could have, won't have. It forces you to make those tough decisions early on.
Moscow, I like that. Helps you separate the must-haves from the nice-to-haves.
Exactly. And depending on the complexity of the project, you might also look at initial architecture definitions, maybe even a preliminary roadmap outlining the major phases of development.
So by the end of this feasibility study, you basically have a solid go-no-go decision point, right?
Exactly. Yeah. You know if it's worth moving forward or if you need to rethink things. It's all about minimizing risk.
Makes a lot of sense.
Why?
I can already see how this sets the stage for a much smoother project down the line. But what about that next phase, that foundations planning? What's that all about?
Well, that's where Friedrich points out that a lot of other agile frameworks kind of fall short. They get so focused on getting to those sprints that they kind of sideline the thorough planning.
Ah, okay.
But DSDM puts foundations planning front and center.
Okay, so it's like laying the foundation before you start building the house. You wouldn't just, you know, start slapping on bricks without a plan, right?
Precisely. And what's really interesting is that during this phase, you actually decide which agile methods you're going to use. Scrum, Kanban, a hybrid approach, whatever makes sense. It's not about dogma. It's about choosing the right tool for the job.
I love that flexibility. So what else is involved in this foundation laying process?
Well, you've got your milestones, those key checkpoints to track progress. Then there's resource planning. Who's doing what? Do we have the right people, the right skill sets? And of course, the all-important budget. How much is this going to cost? Does it align with the value of the project?
It sounds like foundations planning really ties everything together. Mm. The goals, the solution, the process, the resources, the budget. Like, you're really setting yourself up for success from the get-go.
Exactly. By the end of this phase, you have a solid plan, a clear understanding of the solution, and a defined process for moving forward. It's a powerful combination.
It really does sound like it. Okay, so we've got our feasibility study done, our foundation is laid, what happens next? This is where Friedrich brings in that interesting term you mentioned earlier, evolutionary development.
Right, yeah.
What exactly does he mean by that?
This is where the rubber meets the road, you know, the actual building of the solution. But here's where DSDM gets really interesting. It recognizes that Agile, while fantastic in many ways, isn't always the perfect fit for every single task.
Wait, really? I thought the whole point of Agile was to ditch that old waterfall method.
You'd think so, but DSDM is much more pragmatic. It embraces this flexible approach and acknowledges that sometimes a more traditional linear approach can actually be more efficient for certain things.
Okay, my mind is officially blown. So when would you actually use waterfall within an Agile framework? It seems kind of counterintuitive.
Well, let's say you need to procure software licenses or set up your server infrastructure. Those tasks usually have very clear requirements, clear deliverables, and they might involve external vendors with their own processes. Trying to force those into an iterative cycle can be a real headache.
Yeah, I can see that. If you've got a hard deadline from a vendor, you can't exactly say, well, we'll get back to you after our next sprint.
Exactly. And even within the development process itself, there might be components that are well-defined and better suited for a waterfall approach. It's really about using the right tool for the job.
So it's like you have this toolbox full of different methods, and you pick the one that makes the most sense for each situation.
Precisely. DSDM gives you that freedom, that flexibility.
I really like that. Now, I'm curious about something we haven't touched on yet. What happens after deployment? What about the wrap-up phase? Does DSDM address that at all?
That's a great question, and it's one that often gets overlooked. Friedrich doesn't go into a ton of detail about the post-project phase in this particular blog post, but he does emphasize that no matter what development approach you use, wrapping things up properly is absolutely essential.
Right. You need that sense of completion, that closure.
Exactly.
You know, actually, I did a little bit of digging on this topic myself.
Oh, yeah.
And I actually consulted PMI Infinity.
Oh, okay.
You familiar with that?
The AI chatbot from the Project Management Institute.
Exactly.
Yeah. I've heard good things.
It's a fantastic resource. It's free for PMI members. So if you're a member, I highly recommend checking it out.
Cool. So what kind of insights did it offer about post-project activities?
Well, it highlighted some key tasks that I think really resonate with Friedrich's emphasis on proper closure. First, you need to make sure the project actually achieved its goals.
Yeah.
You know, did it stay within budget? Did it meet the timeline? Basic stuff. But you'd be surprised how often those things kind of get overlooked in the rush to move on to the next thing.
Yeah, it's easy to get caught up in the excitement of launching a new system and forget to actually step back and assess whether it achieved what it set out to do.
Exactly. Then there's reviewing the overall quality of the deliverables, documenting lessons learned, what went well, what could have been done better.
Right.
Capturing those insights is like gold for future projects.
It's like having a debriefing after a mission, right? You want to learn from your experiences.
Exactly.
The good and the bad.
Exactly. And then finally, you need to create a final report to officially close out the project. Like put a bow on the whole thing.
I like that.
Signal that it's truly complete.
It's about tying up loose ends, making sure the project doesn't just fade into the background.
Right, right. You know, as we're talking about DSDM and post-project wrap-up, it makes me think about how DSDM kind of fits in with, you know, traditional project management.
Yeah.
It seems like they complement each other rather than being like two completely separate worlds.
I agree. It's not about choosing one over the other. It's about understanding how they connect, how they can work together.
Right.
I actually asked PMI Infinity about the classic project management lifecycle phases.
Oh.
And it laid them out pretty clearly. Initiation, planning, execution, and closure. Sound familiar?
It does. It maps pretty neatly onto the DSDM phases, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's like DSDM takes those classic phases and breaks them down into smaller, more manageable steps.
Right.
Which can be super helpful, especially with these complex IT projects where things can get really messy really quickly.
Yeah, for sure. So what's the big takeaway here? It seems like knowing multiple frameworks and being able to adapt them to the specific needs of a project is like a real superpower.
Absolutely. The more tools you have in your toolbox, the better equipped you are to handle whatever challenges come your way.
I love that. So this whole conversation about DSDM, it's really got me thinking that I want to dive deeper into this framework.
Yeah.
Where would you recommend someone start if they wanted to learn more?
Well, towards the end of his blog post, Friedrich mentions his Agile Business Catalyst certification. It speaks to his deep knowledge of DSDM, and he recommends becoming a member of the Agile Business Consortium.
Oh, interesting.
They've got a wealth of resources, including those templates we talked about, plus contract samples, checklists, planning documents, you name it.
That's fantastic. I might have to join myself. So as we're wrapping up our deep dive into Friedrich's insights here, what do you think is the most important message for, you know, our listeners out there who are like knee deep in their own IT projects? What should they really take away from all of this?
You know, if we kind of connect all of this back to the bigger picture, I think Friedrich's core message is pretty clear. Preparation is paramount, even in the fast-paced world of Agile. Don't skip those crucial early steps. The feasibility analysis, the foundations planning. They might seem like extra work up front, but they can save you a world of pain down the line.
I love that. It's about finding that sweet spot between, you know, the structured, thoughtful approach of traditional project management and then the iterative, adaptable nature of Agile.
Absolutely.
And that's where DSDM seems to really shine.
Exactly. It's about finding the right balance for your specific project and your specific context.
So as we wrap up, I'm left with this thought-provoking question for you, our listener. How can you strike that balance between agile methods and those essential preparation steps that Friedrich has outlined? Think about your own projects, your own challenges. How can you kind of blend the best of both worlds to set yourself up for success?
It really does sound like...
Okay, so we've got our feasibility study done, our foundation is laid, what happens next? This is where Friedrich brings in that interesting term you mentioned earlier, evolutionary development.
Right, yeah.
What exactly does he mean by that?
This is where the rubber meets the road, you know, the actual building of the solution. But here's where DSDM gets really interesting. It recognizes that Agile, while fantastic, in many ways isn't always the perfect fit for every single task.
Really? I thought the whole point of Agile was to ditch that old waterfall method.
You'd think so, but DSDM is much more pragmatic. It embraces this flexible approach and acknowledges that sometimes a more traditional linear approach can actually be more efficient for certain things.
Okay, my mind is officially blown. So when would you actually use Waterfall within an agile framework? It seems kind of counterintuitive.
Well, let's say you need to procure software licenses or set up your server infrastructure. Those tasks usually have very clear requirements, clear deliverables, and they might involve external vendors with their own processes. Trying to force those into an iterative cycle can be a real headache.
Yeah, I can see that. If you've got a hard deadline from a vendor, you can't exactly say, well, we'll get back to you after our next sprint.
Exactly. And even within the development process itself, there might be components that are well-defined and better suited for a waterfall approach. It's really about using the right tool for the job.
So it's like you have this toolbox full of different methods,
huh?
And you pick the one that makes the most sense for each situation.
Precisely. DSDM gives you that freedom, that flexibility.
I really like that. Now, I'm curious about something we haven't touched on yet. What happens after deployment? What about the wrap-up phase? Does DSDM address that at all?
That's a great question, and it's one that often gets overlooked. Friedrich doesn't go into a ton of detail about the post-project phase in this particular blog post, but he does emphasize that no matter what development approach you use, wrapping things up properly is absolutely essential.
Right. You need that sense of completion, that closure.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, actually, I did a little bit of digging on this topic myself.
Oh, yeah.
And I actually consulted PMI Infinity.
Oh.
You familiar with that?
The AI chatbot from the Project Management Institute?
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard good things.
It's a fantastic resource. It's free for PMI members. So if you're a member, I highly recommend checking it out.
Cool. So what kind of insights did it offer about post-project activities?
Well, it highlighted some key tasks that I think really resonate with Friedrich's emphasis on proper closure.
Okay.
First, you need to make sure the project actually achieved its goals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, did it stay within budget? Did it meet the timeline?
Yeah.
Basic stuff. But you'd be surprised how often those things kind of get overlooked in the rush to move on to the next thing.
Yeah, it's easy to get caught up in the excitement of launching a new system and forget to actually step back and assess whether it achieved what it set out to do.
Exactly. Then there's reviewing the overall quality of the deliverables, documenting lessons learned, what went well, what could have been done better.
Right.
Capturing those insights is like gold for future projects.
It's like having a debriefing after a mission, right? You want to learn from your experiences,
Both
the good and the bad.
Exactly. And then finally, you need to create a final report to officially close out the project, like put a bow on the whole thing.
I like that.
Signal that it's truly complete.
It's about tying up loose ends, making sure the project doesn't just fade into the background.
Right, yeah. Right. You know, as we're talking about DSDM and post-project wrap-up, it makes me think about how DSDM kind of fits in with, you know, traditional project management.
Yeah.
It seems like they complement each other rather than being like two completely separate worlds.
I agree. It's not about choosing one over the other. It's about understanding how they connect, how they can work together.
Right.
I actually asked PMI Infinity about the classic project management lifecycle phases.
Oh, okay.
And it laid them out pretty clearly. Initiation planning, execution, and closure sound familiar.
It does. It maps pretty neatly onto the DSDM phases, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's like DSDM takes those classic phases and breaks them down into smaller, more manageable steps, which can be super helpful, especially with these complex IT projects where things can get really messy really quickly.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So what's the big takeaway here? It seems like knowing multiple frameworks and being able to adapt them to the specific needs of a project is like a real superpower.
Absolutely. The more tools you have in your toolbox, the better equipped you are to handle whatever challenges come your way.
I love that. So this whole conversation about DSDM, it's really got me thinking that I want to dive deeper into this framework.
Yeah.
Where would you recommend someone start if they wanted to learn more?
Well, towards the end of his blog post, Friedrich mentions his Agile Business Catalyst certification. It speaks to his deep knowledge of DSDM, and he recommends becoming a member of the Agile Business Consortium.
Oh, interesting.
They've got a wealth of resources, including those templates we talked about, plus contract samples, checklists, planning documents, you name it.
That's fantastic. I might have to join myself. So as we're wrapping up our deep dive into Friedrich's insights here, what do you think is the most important message for, you know, our listeners out there who are like knee deep in their own IT projects? What should they really take away from all of this?
You know, if we kind of connect all of this back to the bigger picture, I think Friedrich's core message is pretty clear. Preparation is paramount, even in the fast-paced world of Agile. Don't skip those crucial early steps, the feasibility analysis, the foundations planning. They might seem like extra work up front, but they can save you a world of pain down the line.
I love that. It's about finding that sweet spot between, you know, the structured, thoughtful approach of traditional project management and then the iterative, adaptable nature of agile.
Absolutely.
And that's where DSDM seems to really shine.
Exactly. It's about finding the right balance for your specific project in your specific context.
So as we wrap up, I'm left with this thought-provoking question for you, our listener. How can you strike that balance between agile methods and those essential preparation steps that Friedrich has outlined? Think about your own projects, your own challenges. How can you kind of blend the best of both worlds to set yourself up for success? And on that note, that brings us to the end of our deep dive. Thanks so much for joining us today, and we'll catch you next time for another fascinating exploration into the world of IT and project management.
Yeah, it is really interesting how all of these concepts, you know, they can be applied to so many different kinds of projects.
Yeah. It really shows how important it is to have good planning and flexible methods no matter what you're working on, I guess.
You know, as we're wrapping up this deep dive, there's something that just keeps coming back to me. It's that idea of Friedrich being so against like the dogmatic application of frameworks. I feel like that's a really important point, you know. Oh yeah, I totally agree. It's like a reminder that there isn't any one framework that has all the answers. You can't just blindly follow some methodology without thinking about the specific needs of your project, or you're setting yourself up for trouble.
Yeah, it's like trying to fit a square peg in a round hole. Sometimes you need to adjust your approach, use different tools, you know, think outside the box a little bit. Yeah. That's where true agility comes in, I think.
That's a great way to put it. It's about being adaptable, understanding the strengths and weaknesses of different approaches, and picking the right one for the job.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think that's a perfect note to end on. It's been a really insightful conversation, you know, exploring all of Friedrich's insights. He's given us a lot to think about, especially when it comes to finding that balance between agile methods and the essential preparation that we talked about.
I agree. It's a really valuable reminder for anyone working on IT projects, whether you're like a seasoned project manager or just getting started.
So as we say goodbye, we want to leave you with this final thought. How can you apply Friedrich's wisdom to your own work? How can you embrace the structure of planning, but also keep the flexibility of agile, you know, to create truly successful IT projects? Until next time, happy diving.